Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up January 20th through the 22nd. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us online at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. So glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with my friend Stephen. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm blessed. Thank you.
Good. Well, we are going to dive into this week's broadcast. It's one that I'm kind of interested to see where it goes because we want to talk about trying to define sexually out of control behavior. What is it? I mean, we talk about sexual addiction. But what is it when... What is the definition of sexually out of control behavior? So I want to just pass it off to you, Stephen, and just kind of see where this thing goes this week.
Okay. So I was just writing down some thoughts about this because we talk about sexual addiction, and but people, I think, call it different things, and it's like the elephant. Are you describing the leg or the tail, or what part of the elephant have you grabbed that you're trying to describe? When it talks about four blind guys all grabbing a different part of the elephant. So we use this sexual addiction as this big catch-all phrase, but what are we really referring to? And I think different authors have used different topics and titles and book titles to describe this. There's eight that I've come up with. One is it's an issue of worshiping an idol. That's number one. Number two, it's a worship disorder. Number three, it's a lust virus. Number four, it's a solution to childhood trauma. Number five, it's an addiction issue. Number six, it's a compulsion. Number seven, it's an intimacy disorder. And number eight is it's an issue of an emotional unavailability. There's aspects of truth to each part of these statements, and I wanted us to go in and explore them, and some of them have book titles that go with them, and so I think you're more familiar with this first one than I am, this idolatry issue. So do you want to try that one, Jonathan?
Yeah, this is an idea that's put out there by Steve Gallagher of Pure Life Ministries. And in one of his books, he talks about this idea of sexual addiction, really, from a biblical perspective, being sexual idolatry, that it's a worship of an idol, that anything that we've really set up in our lives to take the place of how God should be in our lives, how he should operate in our lives and how he should be worshiped, is an idol. And so the notion here is saying, well, when we start putting lust and sexual things in place of God in our lives, we are essentially worshiping that rather than him. And so this is kind of the idea there, that we begin to go back again and again, as he puts it, to the altar of sexual idolatry. The idea that that's what we're bowing to, our will, our lives, our emotions, our everything about our being is knelt down before this sexual idol. And I think that's a decent picture to give of this, because in essence, that's ultimately where it leads. I mean, ultimately, when we get wrapped up in lustful thinking, when we get wrapped up in sexually addictive behaviors, we are repeatedly bowing over and over again to wherever our lust wants to lead. And so that's kind of that's what's behind the idol, is lust.
Right. And either we're worshiping the true God or we're worshiping a false god, an idol. And I think it has an aspect to it of making something else meet our needs, this false god, this idol, making it into more than it is. It's the solution. It's the end. It's the pleasure state. It's like a junior god. We know there's a senior god, but this is right behind the senior god. If the senior god doesn't come through, my little junior god or my idol will deliver what I need.
And I think this is, the only thing that I have a little trouble with this image is that it makes it seem like this sexual idol is other than me. It's detached from me. Where I would actually, in other words, I'm worshiping pornography,
that's a good
or
point.
I'm worshiping, you know, some image, where in fact I think it's more of an internal thing. I'm really bowing to my lust. I'm bowing to something in me. It's a pride thing, actually. It's me saying I'm going to bow to wherever my flesh wants to take me, where my lust wants to take me, rather than bow to the God of the universe who wants to direct my life. If that makes sense. Because sometimes if you think about like a sexual idol, again, we think of it as some detached thing. It's, even when you say the word idol, people start thinking of an image or a statue or something, and that's detached from who we are. And I think this is more about an idol that we're bowing to within ourselves. That
well,
we've set
and
up.
If you think about it as you're talking here, I'm thinking about me, the me, the I, in past discussions we've had, where I have to take care of myself, mm-hmm. and it's all about me, and you know, the me must be taken care of. Aren't you saying, I mean, idol worship means we bow to something outside, but I guess the thought could be is, am I worshiping me?
It's like I'm setting myself up on the throne of my life rather than God, and I'm setting lust up as on the throne. So
that's good. That's good.
So idol is one way.
One of the ways is to worship issue as an idol. So the second thought would be this idea that comes from a book called Addictions, A Banquet in the Grave by Edward Welch. And it's interesting because he says, addictions are ultimately a disorder of worship. We will worship ourselves and our desires, or we will worship the true God. Isn't that an interesting concept, that it's really a worship disorder? And it's funny because I think all of these are going to start to sound the same after a while.
But I like it because it's almost like a prism, you know, and I'm not prison, a prism. Where you have different angles, and as the light hits the different angles of that, you see a different color. And I think that's kind of what this is you're seeing just a little bit of a different angle on this in terms of it talking about a worship disorder, where we were just talking about idols. There's
Yes.
It's the same, but there's a little bit different angle to it.
That's right, because where do you worship and what consumes you and what do you truly value? And when you're quiet and alone, you know, where do you go? What do you really worship? Not outwardly, socially, loud, Sunday morning, dressed up, you know, praise God sort of way, but quiet at home, nothing there, just you.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I'm thinking it's more about how are you ordering your life? Because you know, you're right, it's not necessarily about this outward thing. I'm literally kneeling down before something, or even the idea of what we're talking about with the idol. It's more of like a worship disorder, meaning how are you ordering your life? What is taking priority in your life from a spiritual, emotional perspective?
So he goes on to say that if there's a worship disorder issue, it's because there are two contrary systems at work within us. One is worship the true God, and the other is take care of me. He says... Change has to occur. I mean, true change occurs when you go deeper than just sobriety. Think about that a minute. There's two systems at work. One is going to be worship, and the other is going to be secondary. And then, is it just about doing the right things? And remember what we said in one of our previous programs about how we get to the doing phase for God, and we're doing the right things, and we're acting the right way, and we're saying that we're using church talk. But and then we stop that. And is that all we really need to do is just stop doing the wrong thing?
And that may step on some of our 12-step program friends, because, you know, I've got some buddies that really are hardliners on thinking the end game is sobriety. And I think really where we're going in terms of living a life of purity is much deeper than simply holding a line and not crossing it. You know, it's got to be about much more.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, I think part of it is a motivation issue. I mean, this is talking about it being a worship disorder. How are you ordering your life? If you're ordering your life simply around not crossing a line, you know what? You're not going to have a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning, a sense of direction, a sense of movement and motion. That's all about you being still. You're just not moving. You're not having a sense of direction. And I think God, this idea of a worship disorder, when we align our lives and we order our lives around the true God, you know what? He is a God of movement. He's a God of motion. He's a God of direction and purpose. And so that goes much further than just sobriety.
That's good. So tweaking some words here, it says sexual worship is actually a form of self-worship. And that's why he says it's a worship disorder. And the question becomes, do you desire God above all else? Or do you desire something in creation more than you desire the Creator? So it's called a worship disorder because our worship is out of balance. We're worshiping the wrong things. We actually crawl up on the altar to get worship, to be worshiped. We are the one that needs to be taken care of above all else.
Yeah, and we want to try to order our lives around our desires and our wants rather than around the true God.
So number one, it could be a worship of idols. Number two, it could be a worship disorder. Number three, it's called a lust virus, a lust virus. And so there's a book by Ron, and he just uses the letter of his last name, Ron J, period. So it's the letter J, period. And in the beginning, it says, it defines lust using a dictionary, an Oxford English Dictionary from 1928, it says, lawless and passionate desire of or for some object. And in 89, he quotes Webster as saying, it's intense and unbridled sexual desire. Lust is. And he goes on to say that lust exacts a price in that we are all diminished when we participate in lusting. And so he talks about lust and how lust takes from us. And he talks about how it's a virus that's being unleashed just like any other sickness on our land. So he says male lusting is in fact anti-male, anti-sexual, anti-woman, anti-love, and anti-human. Loving is male, sexual, pro-female, pro-love, and pro-human. But lusting is anti-male, anti-sexual, anti-woman, anti-love, and anti-human. Any thoughts?
Well, and if you think about it, how a virus works, what is it doing? It's attacking your system and making it where it does not function in a healthy manner. So it's anti-health. It's anti, you know, it's anti your biological, you know, makeup. And so I think that's an interesting idea to describe it that way as a virus. One little sidebar, I guess, that I would put on that you want to be a little bit careful about going down that trail too much is a virus in a biological sense is a foreign substance that we don't have control over how it attacks us. Lust, on the other hand, is something that's within our being that you know what, as part of our recovery process, we have to take responsibility and acknowledge the fact that it is something that resides within us. So we can't look at it as I struggle with sort of the disease model of addiction, of lust, because that makes it almost seem like it's an agent that we have no responsibility for. And so you just kind of have to be careful about that line, I think, a little bit in terms of the whole disease model. But I like the idea of what its effect is, the idea that it has this virus effect in our lives of drawing us away from what is actually healthy and right and good for us.
Yes, and he says this lust virus is a deadly personal and social disease. Mm. It'll kill you individually, and it will kill a society if lust is unleashed. And so he goes on to say that if this sounds extreme, you have blissfully avoided the culture shock of internet porn. He said this is like the new terrorism. Internet porn unleashing a lust virus is the new terrorism unleashed on our culture, such that it ends up in personal and social diseased states.
Yeah, we talk about biological warfare, you know, and all these WMDs and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's a good picture of what's happening sexually in our culture. There's this lust warfare going on, that there's this virus that is being passed out through internet and through pornography and all those sorts of things. It's infecting all kinds of people with all sorts of horrible notions about love and sexuality and healthy relationships and all other kinds of damage.
So number four is some individuals who have been traumatized will see sexual acting out as a solution to their childhood trauma. And so that if you are a young person, you were sexually abused at say age 8, somebody imposed their sexuality on you and forced you to participate in a sexual act, then as an 8-year-old, you want to have power and control. You never want to be in that situation again. So as an 8-year-old, you might turn to a 6-year-old and impose your new learned sexuality on them. So you go from victim to perpetrator. And so if there's been some childhood woundedness, you may grab that thing in some way and use it in a distorted way so that you're not using healthy sexuality or God-given sexuality or innocence, pure sexuality, but you are using that to make yourself strong and never be a victim again. And so some people think that that sexual addiction, acting out sexually, is really an old response to an old wound that's just gotten worse and worse.
Yeah, and I think as we go through this, I think it's important to note that no one of these is the exhaustive definition of out-of-control sexuality. We're giving you kind of these different angles, and each one of these is true in terms of a being a component of out of control sexuality. So what I'd encourage our listeners to do is, as we go through these, be thinking kind of what has been highlighted maybe in my life, in my own out of control sexuality. And you might discover, man, you know what? Yeah, I have used it as a massive coping mechanism for childhood trauma and dealing with the pain of my life, because it was soothing, it felt good, it was easy, and yes, that was my escape. And so if that's really resonating with you, then you can start to realize, oh, that component of the definition of out of control sexuality really resonates with me. And I think that can help you kind of form some of your first steps in recovery, because you realize that connects. You know, because sometimes when people latch on to what they say, you know, it's a worship of an idol, and that's their only, they use that as the exhaustive definition of sexual acting out or out of control sexuality. Somebody who's really used it as a solution to childhood trauma goes, that doesn't connect with me. I'm not understanding.
Right.
And so I think by giving all these different, you know, angles to it, we're maybe able to help some people find a way to get the help they need.
Yes, and I really like what you just said, because if you've been a victimized by somebody else, an older person impose their sexuality on you and traumatize you, then what do you want? You want to be strong. You want to be powerful, and you want to enjoy some touch. Well, as a child, you know, being sexual and knowing more than the other kids, which you do because somebody imposed it on you, then makes you powerful and strong and knowing, and you're the teacher, and you get the other ones that are younger and vulnerable to follow, and you're the leader now. And so those words you said were, I think, very insightful words. So if you had some sexual trauma, we encourage you to get some help with mm-hmm. that. So let me lead into the next one and pass it off to you, because oftentimes the term sexual addict or sexual addiction, and men, ooh, they just cringe. They don't want to say that word. Maybe I have a sexual struggle. It's much like an alcoholic would say, you know, I'm an alcoholic. No, maybe I drink heavily. Maybe I like alcohol. I like my beer. Maybe, you know, they'll say anything, but don't call me an alcoholic. And they have to come to that term themselves. But Mark Laser had some thoughts about sexual addiction.
And actually, I'd like to actually combine the next two, okay, because they're really close cousins, because we're talking about one, what you're talking about here, addiction. But then there's this other word that kind of rises up every now and then as another sort of angle on that, which is compulsion. And so I actually want to give some definitions to both of these, and you'll start to see how similar they are. One, the definition of addiction is the state of being, and I love some of the terminology. You want to pick out some of these words here. It's the state of being enslaved to a habit or practice or to something that's psychologically or physically habit-forming to such an extent that to quit causes severe trauma. So that's addiction. Think about some of those words: enslaved, habit-forming.
Wow, those are strong words.
It's habit-forming, and to quit causes trauma. Now, compulsion, on the other hand, it's similar, but a compulsion is a strong, usually irresistible impulse to perform an act, especially one that's irrational or contrary to one's will. So you sort of see some similarities here. This is an irresistible impulse, a compulsion. So addiction is sort of you're enslaved to this habit-forming behavior that to try to quit actually creates severe trauma. I mean, it's traumatic to quit. A compulsion is this irresistible impulse to perform behaviors that are irrational and contrary to what your will is. I mean, it's kind of like when I hear that, I think of the Apostle Paul in Romans 7, where he says, you know what, I have this struggle going on inside of me. Mm. There's what I want to do that's right next to what I don't want to do. And every time I want to do what I know is right, I have this other desire that says I don't want to do that. And so there's this kind of struggle going on. And so I think part of out of control sexuality can be tied to this idea of addiction and compulsion. And they kind of can feed on each other. It's like when within addiction, you're going to be acting compulsively. And sometimes when you act compulsively, you can be feeding an addiction or even growing and starting an addiction. And so it kind of creates this loop.
Right. And I think people that use the word compulsion, they don't like addiction because of what addiction means, the addiction community and the 12 steps. As soon as you think addiction, you have to think AA and NA. And so, but if it's just a compulsion, maybe I can get some medicine and just stop my little, I have this habit. It's just beyond habit. You know, it's compulsion, but I can manage it.
Yeah.
And so I sometimes see compulsion as a junior version of addiction. And the other thing I would add to addiction is I tried to stop and I couldn't. I find myself getting worse. I need more. Those kind of things. Relationships suffer. I do risky things.
And I would just say real quickly, I think sometimes the trouble that people have with terms like addiction and compulsion even is they feel slapped with a label. Oh, man, if I say that I've got an addiction, I've now got this label, and it's permanent. It's never going to come off. It doesn't wash out, you know, that kind of thing. And we want to be real clear. We're talking about out-of-control sexuality. These are not identifying who you are. God has a whole brand-new identity that gives us in Christ. Our identity is not in these things, but this helps us define how we've been living our lives, how we've been behaving, how we've been thinking. That doesn't define who we are or our value before God. I just want to make that distinction here.
So let me do the next one, emotional unavailability. And so if you're physically gone and distracting yourself, then you might be emotionally unavailable. And so you're acting out sexually, you're caught up in sexual behaviors. But what happens is you're behavioral and logical, but you're not very emotional. Emotions scare you. You try to avoid them. Emotional conversations, feelings. What are you feeling? A lot of times, people that are out of control, they're acting. If they feel anything, it's angry or desperate. But they're not feeling the subtle emotions of frustration and irritation, and so emotionally they're cut off. And so what's the solution to every problem? Act out sexually. Where do you get comfort? Sexual. And so there's this emotional disconnect, if you will, that's a part of out-of-control sexual behavior. And so we know that when we call men to come to work to group to put their sexual behavior in check, that they just sit there and they don't immediately emotionally bond because they're immature. Emotionally, they have not matured and developed emotionally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, one of the things that we say all the time around here is that sexual addiction has nothing to do with sex. It's an intimacy disorder, which is that idea of the emotional unavailability. Every single man that we have ever helped in this ministry, that we've ever had personal contact with in this ministry, has had this emotional unavailability. Sometimes we call it emotional detachment, this idea that they have never actually known how to bond emotionally in relationships. A lot of times it's because they come out of an environment where that wasn't modeled, but certainly the addiction itself, the out-of-control sexuality, only perpetuates this idea of emotional unavailability. Because to be out of control sexually, you're not actually bonding. You're not telling the truth. You're lying about your behaviors. You're living a double life. And so all of that plays into being emotionally unavailable.
And what are you growing? Emotional presence and availability? No. Escaping, secrecy, shame, lies, sexuality. So our last one is intimacy disorder.
And I'm going to touch on it just real quickly and actually just point you to Harry Schomburg's book, False Intimacy, because the idea here is, like I was saying, it's not a sexual addiction. It's not about sex. It's actually an intimacy disorder. We don't know how to connect. We don't know how to bond in our marriages. We don't know how to connect with other, same-sex individuals, whether you're man or woman, to have these deep, intimate relationships that are emotional, that are connected, that are loving, that are helpful and healthy. And so I would really recommend Harry Schomburg's book, False Intimacy, to help you kind of dig through that and work through that. Well, we are out of time, but I hope that this has shed some light for you on just kind of catching the various angles to be able to help understand how to define out-of-control sexuality, because I think it's important to have some good definitions in order to be able to deal with the issue. We are here to help you break free. We're here to help you tell your story and begin the path of healing. So please contact us so that we can help you on your journey. We're glad you've been with us, and we'll see you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.